I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. From New York, this is Democracy Now!
We condemn what has been done to us, which we consider as a crime against humanity. Because destroy our culture, uprooting our people, it's not a way of letting people live as human beings.
Pressure is growing on Britain and the United States to pay reparations and apologize for forcibly removing the residents of the Chagos Islands in the Indian Ocean more than a half century ago so the United States could build a military base on the island of Diego Garcia. We'll speak with a leading Chagossian activist, then to New Mexico, where a Trump supporter wearing a MAGA hat opened fire on an indigenous-led protest against the reinstallation of a statue honoring a 16th century Spanish conquistador. One indigenous climate activist was shot and needed to be airlifted for emergency surgery. We'll get the latest. Then a shocking new report estimates some 35,000 people in the United States have been killed at the hands of U.S. law enforcement since the year 2000. We'll speak to two researchers with the LARASA Database Research Project, which has revealed the number of brown and black people killed by police may be more than double the amount that has been widely reported.
The LARASA Database Project, goal is to provide as accurate a count of the deaths of Latinos and other persons of color by or at the hands of police. It's a breakthrough study that expands on the data that's already being collected by other resources.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The UN Security Council voted Monday to deploy multinational armed forces to Haiti as the island nation combats worsening gang violence. The intervention, which came at the repeated request of U.S.-backed Haitian Prime Minister Ariel Henry, will be led by Kenya, marking the first deployment of international security forces to Haiti in nearly 20 years. The proposal received 13 votes in favor, with Russia and China abstaining. The resolution was drafted by the United States and Ecuador, allowing foreign troops to remain in Haiti for a year, with a review after 9 months. The Biden administration pledged at least $100 million to fund the operation. This is the United States Deputy Ambassador to the UN, Jeffrey De Laurentiis.
This mission comes at the request of the Haitian government and Haitian civil society to address the insecurity and dire humanitarian crisis the country has faced for far too long. The deployment of this mission will help to support Haiti's critical near-term needs and to foster the security conditions necessary for the country to advance long-term stability.
Kenya had previously offered to contribute 1,000 police officers. The Bahamas, Jamaica, Antigua and Barbuda have also vowed to send forces. Many Haitians have opposed the move due to the disastrous history of UN, U.S. and foreign interventions in Haiti, a UN mission that left Haiti in 2017 behind an outbreak of cholera that killed some 10,000 people. UN officials were also accused of widespread sexual violence, including the abuse of children. Amnesty International's voiced concerns about the intervention in Kenyan-led armed forces, recently citing Kenya's continued unlawful use of force against protesters. Meanwhile, peace activists have denounced the move as a U.S.-led invasion. In 2021, the U.S. Special Envoy to Haiti resigned to protest the Biden administration's policies in Haiti. In a resignation letter, the longtime diplomat Daniel Foote wrote, "What our Haitian friends really want and need is the opportunity to chart their own course without international puppeteering and favored candidates, but with genuine support for that course," unquote. No date's been confirmed for the deployment, but U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken recently said it could begin within months. A United Nations mission has arrived in Nagorno-Karabakh for the first time in 30 years, as Armenia's government warns nearly all the territory's population of 120,000 ethnic Armenians has fled following Azerbaijan's military blitz to seize the territory in September. A UN official in Armenia's capital said registration centers have been overwhelmed with huge numbers of exhausted and frightened refugees, a third of whom are children.
People are tired. This is a situation where they've lived under 9 months of blockade. It's not something that has just happened where you pick up and you go. They've suffered 9 months of blockade already, and when they come in, they're full of anxiety, they are scared, they're frightened, and they want answers. They want answers as to what's going to happen next.
Armenia has accused Azerbaijan of ethnic cleansing. On Monday, Armenia's European Union envoy urged Western nations to sanction Azerbaijan, including its lucrative oil and gas industry, and requested military aid for Armenia. Here in the United States, the Supreme Court opens its new term Monday, hearing oral arguments in a case that'll determine who's eligible for reduced prison sentences under the First Step Act, which rolls back mandatory minimum sentences for certain people convicted of nonviolent drug charges. Today's Supreme Court justices are hearing a case brought by a predatory payday lending group challenging the leadership structure of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau. Legal experts warn the outcome of the case could undermine other regulatory agencies and federal programs, including Medicare and Social Security. Meanwhile, the Supreme Court has denied an appeal without comment by Texas death row prisoner Robert Roberson, who's always maintained his innocence. He was convicted in 2003 of murdering his 2-year-old daughter. His lawyers say he was convicted on the basis of testimony by forensic experts who'd cited the shaken baby syndrome hypothesis, which was popularized in the early 2000s but never scientifically validated. Last month, the New Jersey appeals court ruled the theory is junk science. In more news from the Supreme Court, Justice Clarence Thomas recused himself from a case Monday involving former Trump legal adviser John Eastman, who formerly served as a law clerk for Thomas. This follows reports Justice Thomas's wife, the Republican activist Ginni Thomas, corresponded with Eastman ahead of the January 6, 2021 insurrection about efforts to reverse the results of the 2020 election to keep Trump in power. Justice Thomas, however, did not recuse himself from a case backed by New York landlords challenging the city's rent stabilization policies. The anti-corruption group, the Revolving Door Project, wrote in response, quote, Justice Thomas's billionaire benefactor Harlan Crowe has a vested interest in weakening rent control laws across the country to buttress his real estate empire's profits, unquote. On Capitol Hill, Republican Florida Congressmember Matt Gaetz introduced a resolution Monday to remove House Speaker Kevin McCarthy from his leadership position. Gaetz and other far-right Republicans blasted McCarthy after he brokered a deal on a short-term funding bill that averted a government shutdown. Gaetz also blames McCarthy for making a, quote, secret Ukraine side deal with Democrats, which McCarthy denies. Vice President Kamala Harris is swearing in a new member of California's Senate delegation today following the death of long-term Democratic Senator Dianne Feinstein last week. LaFonza Butler becomes the first openly lesbian Black senator and just the third Black woman to serve in the Senate in U.S. history. Donald Trump appeared in a Manhattan courtroom Monday for the start of a civil trial brought by New York Attorney General Letitia James. Trump and his business partners, including his adult sons, Eric and Donald Trump Jr., are accused of fraudulently inflating the value of the Trump Organization's assets by billions to obtain loans and favorable business deals. James is seeking to fine Trump $250 million and is asking for a permanent ban on Trump family members running a business in New York.
No matter how powerful you are, no matter how much money you think you may have, no one is above the law. And it is my responsibility and my duty and my job to enforce it. The law is both powerful and fragile. And today in court, we will prove our case.
Trump will receive a bench trial presided over by New York Supreme Court Justice Arthur Engoron after Trump's lawyers did not request a jury trial. Speaking to reporters outside the court Monday, Trump assailed Attorney General James, who's African-American, as a racist and called Judge Engoron a disgrace.
He's a Democrat operative, and he's a disgrace to people that call themselves judges. This is a judge that should be disbarred. This is a judge that should be out of office. This is a judge that some people say could be charged criminally for what he's doing.
On Monday, over 30 advocacy groups, including CREW, that's Citizens for Responsibility and Ethics in Washington, and Public Citizen, published an open letter calling for the protection of juries in Trump's four ongoing criminal cases. The letter cites Trump's harassment of jurors in Georgia and Washington, D.C., adding, quote, "These attacks threaten centuries-old American institutions designed by the framers to hold to account any leader who would be king," unquote. The U.S. Department of Labor has launched an investigation into child labor at poultry processors Perdue and Tyson Foods. The probe comes after lawmakers grilled the head of the Occupational Safety and Health Administration about reports in the New York Times about migrant children getting burned and maimed on the job at Perdue and Tyson slaughterhouses. This is North Carolina Democratic Congress member Alma Adams, the ranking Democrat on House Workforce Protection Subcommittee, whose repeated requests for a hearing on child labor violations have gone ignored by the committee's Republican chair, Virginia Fox.
Thanks to recent news investigations, we also know that children, especially unaccompanied migrant children, have been suffering all manner of harms in jobs that they should not be working on in the first place. But take a closer look at those stories. Chemicals so caustic that they burn through multiple layers of gloves, machines without guards to prevent people's arms or hands from getting mangled, food dust and cleaning chemical fumes that irritate the sinuses and lungs. These stories are not only about children in desperate circumstances, they're also about workplaces that are dangerous to people of all ages.
To see our interview with the New York Times' Hannah Dreyer about her investigation into child labor in the United States, go to democracynow.org. The World Health Organization has approved the use of a more affordable and highly effective vaccine against malaria. WHO Director General Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus announced the recommendation Monday.
In areas with seasonal transmission, it reduced symptomatic cases of malaria by 75% in the 12 months following a three-dose series of the vaccine.
The vaccine was developed by Oxford University as only the second malaria vaccine to be recommended by the WHO. Malaria is among the world's deadliest infectious diseases, and the mosquito that carries it has been described as the world's deadliest animal. In 2021, over 500,000 people, largely children under the age of 5, died of malaria, the vast majority of them in Africa. In California, the longtime community leader and beloved bilingual newspaper publisher Dolores Sanchez has died at the age of 87. For nearly four decades, Sanchez presided over Eastern Group Publications, which operated 11 newspapers, bringing news to Latinx communities on Los Angeles's east side and neighboring cities. And press freedom groups are calling on Congress to pass new legislation protecting media workers on the fifth anniversary of the state-sponsored killing of Washington Post columnist Jamal Khashoggi by Saudi Arabia in Istanbul in 2018. The Khashoggi Act, introduced Monday, would allow lawsuits in the United States against governments implicated in extraterritorial repression. The separate Khashoggi resolution pledges U.S. action to hold the Saudi government accountable for human rights abuses. On Monday, elected officials in Los Angeles welcomed friends and family of Jamal Khashoggi to a street dedication ceremony on a stretch of Wilshire Boulevard outside the consulate of Saudi Arabia. A sign declaring the space Jamal Khashoggi Square reads, quote, "A journalist and advocate for human rights slain by the Saudi government," unquote. In Washington, D.C., the National Press Club held a moment of silence to remember Khashoggi and other journalists whose killings had gone unpunished. Joining the ceremony was Michael Omerman, director of research for Israel-Palestine at Dawn, the organization founded by Jamal Khashoggi.
Whereas Jamal's death outraged the world and seemed for a moment to inject human rights into U.S. foreign policy in the MENA region, today, unfortunately, that no longer seems to be the case. That's most apparent in Saudi Arabia, but not only. Following the killing of Shireen Abu Akleh, we saw how the U.S. government literally tried to redefine accountability in order to shield an ally from scrutiny. This is unacceptable. Jamal was murdered for the power of his ideas, and because even in the face of mortal danger, he refused to remain silent.
And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman in New York, joined by Democracy Now! Co-host Juan Gonzalez in Chicago. Hi, Juan.
Hi, Amy, and welcome to all of our listeners and viewers across the country and around the world.
Well, pressure is growing on Britain and the United States to pay reparations and apologize for expelling residents of the Chagos Archipelago in the Indian Ocean half a century ago, so the United States could build a major military base on the island of Diego Garcia, which is located halfway between Africa and Indonesia and about 1,000 miles south of India. The U.S. base at Diego Garcia played a key role in the U.S. invasions of Iraq and Afghanistan. For over 50 years, Chagossian people have been attempting to return home, but their efforts have been blocked by both the U.K. and the United States. Earlier this year, Human Rights Watch accused the two governments of committing crimes against humanity. In a moment, we'll be joined by a prominent Chagossian activist who's here in the United States visiting to meet with U.S. lawmakers and Biden administration officials. But first, let's turn to an excerpt of a video produced by Human Rights Watch titled "The Last British Colony in Africa, How Chagossians Were Forced Off Their Homeland."
In the 1960s, Britain ruled over about 18 countries and three territories in Africa.
Many African states were already engaged in the process of starting to fight for their independence. Mauritius was fully engaged in this process.
Britain granted independence to Mauritius in 1968, but with a major caveat. The UK would keep the Chagos Archipelago for a small price.
US government officials in the era of decolonization were growing concerned about losing control of the world. So a group of officials in the U.S. Navy developed a plan to identify small islands around the world, and Diego Garcia became the prime island on which they wanted to build a base.
Diego Garcia is one of the main islands in the Chagos Archipelago where many families had lived for generations.
The secret deal began being worked out by the U.S. and British governments in the early 1960s, where the U.S. government insists to the British that we want this base and we want it without any local population. The British government agrees to do the dirty work of getting rid of the Chagossians in exchange for wiping away $14 million in debt that the British government owes the U.S. government.
British officials feared that if they acknowledged the permanent population of Chagos, they would have to report to the UN about the new colony they had created.
What the British do in 1965 is recharacterize the entire population of the Chagos Archipelago as contract laborers, not a permanent population, to create the ruse that there's no population.
Between 1968 and 1973, the British government removed about 1,500 people from the Chagos Archipelago to Mauritius and to the Seychelles. They were not given a choice.
The only thing I saw my mother take with her was a little chest to put our clothes in it and a mattress. That's all. Everything else we left there. They put all the dogs into a chamber and gassed them until they died.
An excerpt from a video by Human Rights Watch titled "The Last British Colony in Africa, How Chagossians Were Forced Off Their Homeland." One of the voices featured in that clip was David Vine, a professor at American University in Washington, D.C., author of Island of Shame, The Secret History of the U.S. Military on Diego Garcia. Professor Vine is also the author of Base Nation, How U.S. Military Bases Abroad Harm America and the World. He's joining us now from New York, along with Olivier Bancolt, who is the chair of the Chagos Refugees Group, the organization representing most Chagossians in exile. His recent article for Open Democracy is titled "The U.S. and U.K. Stole Our Homes, 50 years on, we're still being denied justice. We welcome you both to Democracy Now! Let's begin with Olivier Bancol. Thanks so much for being with us. Explain why you're here in the United States, and in fact, even what happened to your own family half a century ago that you're still demanding a correction for, as well as all of the Chagossians living in exile.
First of all, good morning, Hemi. First of all, thank you for giving me this opportunity to talk on behalf of my people. The reason we are here in the United States is to find out from the Biden administration and apologize for what wrong had been done to the Chagossian people. I think that the U.S. government need to change their policy concerning human rights for Chagossian people who had been recruited. We want that the people of the United States understand our position. As far as our international human rights had been banished for so many years, and we want justice to be done. We want that the U.S., who is fully responsible for what happened to our people, because of the peace, we had been having a nightmare story. And we want them to recognize and to put an end and to apologize for all wrongs that they did, and started by making some reparation for our people, like compensation and helping to resettle Chagossian on Chagos. My story, I was born on Peros Banos, one of the island of Chagos Archipelago, and I was expelled in 1968. The reason, because I have our family have to come to Mauritius to have treatment for my sister who had been hurt by a wheel cart. But unfortunately, after 3 months, my sister passed away. And when my mom and dad decided to return, because we have left all our belongings there in a view to return, when we asked to return, we have learned that it will be impossible for us because the island had been given to America. And it is the wrong that we had been suffered, not being on our birthplace, being away from where we were born. And this is one of the reasons I want just to get more awareness of the situation and put their responsibility toward our people.
And Olivier Bancol, who have you met with in Washington among the leaders in the United States? And do you sense any support for your demands in Congress?
Yes, of course, we are very hopeful to say that we have been able to meet with many people, especially members of Congress, members of Congress. And we met also with officials from State Department, because it's according to them, it's the first time that they hear from Chagossian what our demands are. The most important is concerning our fundamental rights and our dignity as a people. If we are a people, according to Universal Declaration of Human Rights, that everywhere, if you were born on a place, you have the right to live on the place. And we cannot accept that other people can live on our place, whereas we are declared as person non grata. This is the main occasion, and we want to have the support of congressmen in order to find out how to present something like a letter, a resolution, or even an hearing to explain our situation and to let the U.S. government shoulder the responsibility toward our Chagossian people.
You talk about the history of the inhabitants of the Chagos Islands, the long-term history that rebuts this contention of the U.S. and Britain that there were only contract laborers there in the 60s?
Both of the government, UK and U.S., had lies, because they all say that before the installation of the U.S. military base, they were not permanent inhabitant there. It's totally untrue, because people were living for more than five generations. I give my own example. I was born there. My father, my mother, my grandfather, grandmother, even my great-grandmother were born there. And we were not, we have never been contractual workers. We were permanent inhabitants. And life for us is very wonderful because we were living in peace and harmony. We have our culture, we have our house, we have our job. And after working hours, we used to go fishing, and we all live as one family. Suddenly, they just decided to choose Diego Garcia because it is a very strategical point, place, and it is a very well situated. They decided to build a U.S. military based on Diego Garcia, but forget about the fundamental rights of our people who were living in peace and harmony.
I want to play some clips of other Chagossian voices. This is Eileen Louis speaking to Human Rights Watch about her life in Chagos before she was forcibly removed from her homeland.
Life in Chagos for people was like living as one family. Everything we share, even the food we cook, we share. If there is a problem, there is always someone to help.
And this is Eliane Baptiste talking about her family story.
I moved to the UK when I was 15 years old, but my parents stayed in Mauritius. In the 1960s, hundreds of Chagossians, including my mom, were forced to leave the Chagos archipelago or not allowed to return because the British and US governments wanted to make space for a US military base. That UK-US pact had a detrimental impact for those living on the islands, as well as for future generations, causing many families to be divided.
The British granted British citizenship to the Chagossians and the first generations, which allowed people like my sisters and I to move to the UK. But not everyone had the chance to, because there were limitations and restrictions, such as the age of the first generations and the spousal visas. My mom's siblings were not born on the Chagos Islands, so they and my cousins are not eligible for the British citizenship. It just makes me think that if the Chagossians were not deported, if my family, my grandparents, my mom were allowed back on the islands, none of this would have happened.
That's Eliane Baptiste. These voices, Professor David Vine, when you hear the pain of what was lost, first of all, I mean, explain from the beginning. Many have called this a crime against humanity. The U.S. and U.K. moving in, the U.S. building this military base, and aside from just building that military base, saying no Chagossians could live there.
Good morning, Amy and Juan. Indeed, this is a crime against humanity, a fundamentally racist crime against humanity that was masterminded from the beginning by U.S. government officials who seized upon the idea of building a base on Diego Garcia and getting rid of the Chagossians. And then they proceeded to pay the British government secretly $14 million to basically do the dirty work of getting rid of the Chagossians, and then proceeded to orchestrate the expulsion over the course of several years in the late 1960s and early 1970s. And from the beginning, the U.S. government has had the power. They had the power to exile the Chagossians, and now the Biden administration has the power to finally make this right. This is an outrage, a crime against humanity indeed, that should have been corrected, should never have happened, should have been corrected years ago by prior administrations. But the Biden administration now has the ability to show the world, at a time when the Biden administration is rightly criticizing other governments and their human rights records, Saudi Arabia, China, among others, at this time, the Biden administration has the ability to change U.S. policy and finally provide justice to the Chagossians by allowing them to return home, by providing compensation, by assisting with the resettlement of the Chagossians in the land of their ancestors, in their homeland, the land that has been taken from them.
And Professor Vine, sadly, the example of what happened with the Chagossians is not unique. Could you talk a little bit about this? These enormous bases that the United States has a system around the world, places like Okinawa, Vieques, Hawaii, of course, the Philippines back in the days of Subic Bay, Guam, where the military basically runs roughshod over the local populations.
It's true, and there are more than 20 cases in which the U.S.